we are being joined by Chief Judge Pirtle. Judge Pirtle, welcome. So, Mr. Timmon?
Timon,
good morning to you, and also Ms. Blessen, good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
I do not.
Then, Mr. Timon, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Lee Timon. I am the attorney for Sheena Hammond, who is the appellant in this case. This case is a criminal case where Ms. Hammond was charged with possession of methamphetamine. Procedural history, prior to trial, there was a motion to suppress that was heard by the district court. The motion to suppress challenged three aspects of the case: search of Ms. Hammond's vehicle, the arrest of her after the search of that vehicle, and then the subsequent search of her person as a search incident to that arrest.
Do all of those ultimately hinge upon the search of the vehicle?
I think everything comes as a result of the search of the vehicle, but they are separate issues that could potentially impact what evidence would have been admissible at trial. So it's not an all or nothing. If the search of the car was found to be illegal, then obviously all of the evidence would be thrown out. If the search of the car was upheld, we're still challenging whether or not the results of that search were sufficient to arrest her and then lead to the search of her person. So even if the search of the vehicle held up, the arrest and the search of her person, if those were overturned, there would still be admissible evidence, but it would certainly change the evidence that was presented at trial as whether that would be sufficient to support a conviction.
I'd like to talk for a moment about the, we have a two-part standard of review, which I think you accurately cite in your brief, and you allude to the first part of the standard, the clear error regarding historical facts. But in your brief, I did not find any assignment of error or any argument at all really quarreling with the historical facts recited by the district court in the order that appears in pages 34 to 36 of our transcript. Is that, I mean, you certainly are quarreling with the legal significance of those facts, but am I correct, you are not quarreling with the facts recited by the court?
I think what you're referencing is that my brief addressed the initial search of the car. The district court didn't really touch in its order on the motion to suppress. The district court didn't really touch on whether or not there was probable cause to arrest Ms. Hammond and then led to the search incident to arrest. I didn't address that, not necessarily because I wasn't finding that to be an appealable issue. I guess I was on appeal was the entire motion to suppress and whether it should be granted and whether the court erred in all of its rulings. Whether I specifically addressed each of the factors, I guess that might have been an oversight, but Ms. Hammond intended to appeal all of the aspects of that motion to suppress that were denied.
You're focusing on the legal issue about was there or was there not consent.
The primary issue.
Insofar as we're talking about the first of your
right.
Reassigned errors, you're not quarreling with the historical facts recited.
No, I don't think there's any factual dispute with we don't have any dispute with the court's recitation of the facts.
Okay.
I guess more the application of the law regards to whether those facts supported an arrest and a subsequent search of her person.
So if she said thus and so, if she said XYZ, what's the legal significance of it?
You mean in regards to her responses to the law enforcement officers?
Yeah.
I think the key here is this is not a first-tier encounter between Ms. Hammond and law enforcement. I think this is a second-tier encounter. It started off as a voluntary, consensual encounter between law enforcement. They were there to investigate a potential intoxicated driver, but they then started to do field sobriety tests, which I think anyone who is being asked to do field sobriety tests by a law enforcement officer is going to assume that they're required to comply with those tests. They did a number of those tests. They didn't tell her whether she was under arrest or whether she was free to go. They just immediately pivoted to, are you under the influence of anything? And she said no. And they said, well, do you have anything in your car? And do you mind if we take a look in her car?
Before you get too far down that
road,
I want to return to the facts for just one more question. And that is, there are the findings of fact made by the trial judge in denying the motion to suppress. And then at trial, there's a stipulation of facts.
Mm-hmm.
The words are not exactly the same. Are you contending that there is any significant difference factually between the stipulation of facts and the factual findings made by the trial court on the motion to suppress?
I think the stipulation of facts is what is being presented by the county attorney's office to support the crime. But the facts that were submitted at the motion to suppress go more towards the legal analysis of whether or not a search was proper, whether an arrest was proper. And those don't necessarily have a bearing on whether there's enough evidence to convict.
And you've told me you have no quarrel with the district court's factual findings. To the extent we consider those, the stipulation of facts at trial in relation to the motion to suppress, does that change any of the relevant facts?
I guess the issue would be that what the court is looking at when it's at trial is a different standard than when it's looking at evidence in regards to a motion to suppress. It's a fact finder that is looking at these facts are being admitted over our objection, and regardless of the legal issues as to whether they should have been admitted, the court is considering all of those facts and determining whether there's enough evidence to convict her.
Is the law that at the appellate level we are permitted to look at both that which was put into evidence at the motion to suppress as well as subsequent proceedings?
I think that primarily the court would look at the evidence that was submitted at the motion to suppress to determine whether that motion to suppress was properly denied or whether it was error for the court to deny that motion. The facts that are submitted at the trial are not for the purpose of a motion to suppress. We objected, the court, we put our objection in the stipulation. The court obviously overruled that based upon its prior ruling and proceeded to consider the facts in the stipulation.
Well, given the facts as they are presented in the district court's order and in the stipulation of facts, what's your best argument that there was not consent given for the search?
The primary issue is that at that moment when they're asking her if they can look in her car, she is still somewhat under their detainment of being investigated for a DUI. She doesn't say yes. She doesn't say go ahead. She says if you need to. Ms. Hammond is a experienced criminal, if you understand. I think you get from the record that law enforcement is very familiar with. She believes that they are investigating her for a potential crime of driving under the influence or intoxication. They ask if they can search her car, and she says, if you need to. They ask again, and she says, if you need to, more power to you. I would state that Ms. Hammond was more acquiescing to their investigation. She was indicating she's not going to obstruct them. She's not going to interfere with their ability to search her car. But if they had flat out said, do you give us permission to search, that would be a different question. If this was walking up to her out of the broad daylight and say, hey, can we take a look in your car? I think that would be a different encounter than what Ms. Hammond was encountering. She was basically being investigated for a potential crime. They hadn't given her an indication yet as to whether she was free to go, free to refuse their request, similar to a Miranda situation.
Is a person capable of giving valid consent in the course of valid consent to search in the course of a Tier 2 encounter?
Yes, they can, if the state can show that the person has not in any way been coerced or under duress. And I think the key issue is...
I think that's
the state's burden at the motion to suppress, is to show that law enforcement did not get that consent through any coercion or duress or any use of force. We're not saying that Ms. Hammond was being held at gunpoint. She didn't have handcuffs on. You know, there's certainly factual issues as to whether how much in detention she was. But at the same time, she knew she was being investigated for a potential crime, and they had not told her that they were done with that investigation. As far as she knew, searching her vehicle would be part of that investigation. So when they say, do you mind if we take a look in your car, she's saying, more power to you. I don't think she interpreted that. I'm sorry.
Didn't she also kind of wave her hand, like, go ahead? That second time, there's some body language there in addition to the words that
certainly
being spoken.
And I think there's case law that says consent can be inferred through body language, or if somebody, you know, invites them in with a waiver of their hand. I think the key issue is whether or not she was being detained against her will in that moment, at least in regards to an investigation, and whether the state needed to show more than just she said it was okay.
So at what point do you think she was not free to leave?
I think as soon as they started field sobriety tests. And as soon as she's, in their mind, she was showing signs of being under the influence. They immediately pivoted when they were done with those field sobriety tests. Officers immediately pivoted to asking her if she's under the influence of anything, then asked if she has any drugs in her car. And she's saying no. She's saying, no, I'm not under the influence. No, I don't have anything in my car. Well, do you mind if we take a look in your car? And she says, if you need to.
So is your further argument that she was giving permission to do some kind of general search of the car, but not any real detailed search?
I mean, I know there's case law that talks about if an officer says, can we look in the car versus if we can search the car, that it doesn't have to be, you know, they don't have to give 100% clear indication of limiting their search. But I think it does matter as far as whether they're saying, do you mind if we look in your car versus can we do a full thorough search and tear apart the frame of the car, and they're looking in a steering wheel cover, or if they're going to open up backpacks that are in the car. I think in that moment, Ms. Hammond did not believe that she was free to go or free to deny them. It was more she was being polite and submitting to their authority. And I think that's the key in the question of consent.
Yes. With respect to the show of authority, there seems to be some reference to the Worley case in the Sixth Circuit, and I think the question there was, you've got the badge, I guess. I mean, the answer was, you've got the badge, I guess you can. Is that in response to a show of authority? Is that where you're going?
And I think Ms. Hammond was understanding that law enforcement was doing an investigation, and she's trying not to get charged with obstruction. I think that was her mindset at the time. I don't think, if they had said, do you give us permission to search, I think it would be a very different answer from Ms. Hammond. Yeah. If this was...
In your brief, you alluded to this as well, but she didn't testify at the motion to suppress, and there's nothing about her state of mind in any of the facts, is there?
Correct, and I would say that it wasn't our burden to prove what her state of mind was or any of that, but I understand where you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, you can't throw in facts that aren't in the record.
Right, and obviously I'm speculating. I can't say for sure. I'm not Sheena Hammond, and yes, she did not testify. So.
But your argument is she couldn't say no.
I think what the court is supposed to look at is what a reasonable person in her situation would feel that they are. What would they feel that their rights are as far as objecting to a request by law enforcement, and whether a reasonable person would feel free to deny a question from that law enforcement officer, such as if, can we do field sobriety tests?
You also say that once they found the crystal substance inside of the steering wheel cover, they didn't do a presumptive test, they didn't know it was an illegal drug, so they had no probable cause to arrest. Is that your other contention?
I realize I'm well past time, so hopefully I can still answer.
You may.
I feel that, yes, they indicated in their testimony the only thing they found in the car was this little white rock wrapped up in a receipt inside the steering wheel. She had said that she had not used anything. She had said that there was nothing in the car. They didn't find any other paraphernalia related to the use of methamphetamine. So that is our second issue, is even if the search of the car is okay, whether or not one little rock found in the steering wheel cover is sufficient probable cause to arrest her for a crime and then subsequently search her, which, of course, the subsequent search led to further drug evidence, which obviously supports the initial theory, but it's a matter of what did they know at the time that they arrested her.
Thank you.
Did they know her criminal history?
I think they mentioned in the testimony at the motion to suppress that they were aware of her prior history of drug use, and I think they asked her if she had used, and she had said not for a couple years. So they had some knowledge that she was a previous drug user. We're not saying that this is a person that they've never interacted with. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Blessing, good morning to you.
May it please the Court, I'm Taryn Blessin, Assistant Attorney General, representing the appellee of the State of Nebraska. This is the appellant's direct appeal of her conviction for possession of methamphetamine and possession of drug paraphernalia. There are two issues on appeal. I'll only talk about the motion to suppress issue because the appellant concedes that if the motion to suppress issue is upheld, there was sufficient evidence to convict her. She argued in her motion to suppress and on appeal that she did not voluntarily consent to the search of her vehicle, and police did not have probable cause to arrest her because at the time she was detained, law enforcement did not have confirmation the item was a controlled substance. It is the state's position that the court properly denied her motion to suppress, and we ask you to affirm. For regarding the search of her vehicle, she argued that her response of, if you need to, more power to you, when Officer Jordan asked if he could look in her vehicle, was ambiguous and not seen as affirmative consent. She felt she was under implied coercion and she was not free to leave and was not made aware of her right to refuse.
Was she free to leave?
Yes, I think so. I think throughout the entire time until she was arrested, it was a voluntary Tier 1 encounter.
Even when the field sobriety test started?
I still think so, because it was not a, hey, we think you're under the influence right now, can we do field sobriety tests? Officer Jordan worded it as, hey, my trainee right here, like, can we do some field sobriety tests to show them what they look like? And she said, sure. Like, I don't really have time, but sure, why not? Consent to search may be implied by action rather than words. There are several cases referenced in my brief where consent was implied rather than affirmatively given by an unequivocal, yes, you may search. She also asserts, yeah, she was coerced and merely submitted to authority, and that she was not made aware of her right to refuse. There is no requirement in Nebraska that an officer has to advise a defendant of their right to refuse requests. Only one case referenced in my brief involved the defendant being told of his right to refuse, and that was because he was provided an advisement form before his blood was drawn at the hospital. All other cases that I cite found consent by the defendant's actions without the officer specifically advising the defendants of their right to refuse the request. And however, regardless of whether or not she was actually advised that she could refuse, she was aware of her right and her ability to refuse because she exercised that right twice during the encounter. She expressed at one point when they were searching her vehicle that she wanted to go inside. Officer Jordan said, hey, before you go inside, like, you can I search your person to make sure you don't have anything? She said, no, I'll just wait. That was when she refused. And then after she was arrested, they were talking about text messages on her phone of whether she was a user or a distributor, and she refused to let Officer Jordan go through her phone. And as opposing counsel said, she is an experienced criminal, so I would think that she would know that she had the right to refuse when it was a simple question of, can we take a look in your car? I think the facts here are pretty clear that she consented to the search of the vehicle, and the consent was not under duress or coercion. The conversation between them was very casual and cordial the entire encounter. She cooperated willingly with the request to perform field sobriety maneuvers. And as I said before, the question that, can we do some field sobriety maneuvers, was completely open-ended, and she could have said no.
It seemed like the district court was at some point hung up on the question asked, can we look in your car versus can we search the vehicle? Is there a distinction, and does that matter?
I think the district court's order was focused more on, like, the scope of the search, and I'm not sure that was really the legal question of the motion to suppress.
Well, it sounded like it during the discussion.
Right.
On the record, he's talking about briefing and words matter, and I know in these cases that say looking versus right. searching, so he seemed to have some concern about that.
I think he focused, too, on the district court order. He focused on that once they started the search of the vehicle, she kind of like walked off and didn't object for the rest of it. So he said the scope was probably fine. I think really the issue for the motion to suppress hinged on whether there was consent to search the vehicle and not necessarily the scope. And that's the only issue that's raised on appeal, is whether it was consent. So I would say that's the issue we're here for. So it's the state's position that the appellant's words, along with her action of motioning toward the car, walking away, making a phone call, and then not objecting the whole time while they searched their vehicle, implied her consent. So based on the totality of those circumstances, it was reasonable for the officers on scene to believe that she was given her consent to search the vehicle. Regarding the probable cause to arrest, she argued that there was no probable cause to arrest her because they didn't know it was controlled substance, because they didn't field test it. Probable cause is not a high bar, and due weight should be given to inferences by law enforcement based on their experience and specialized training. Officer Jordan testified at the motion to suppress hearing that he had extensive specialized training in more roadside maneuvers, believing when someone's under the influence, and then identifying controlled substances, specifically methamphetamine. He testified that the observations he made during the field sobriety maneuvers gave him belief that she may be under the influence of the CNS stimulant, and then when they found the receipt from her place of employment folded around this crystalline substance, he had no doubt that it was methamphetamine. So I would say, based on those totality of the circumstances regarding her behavior and the training experience, it was proper for them, and they had probable cause to arrest her, and from that arrest, it was a lawful search incident to their arrest. And then from there, they found the drug paraphernalia in her pocket and the additional bag of baggie of methamphetamine. So therefore, the state would submit that the Hammond consented to the search for a vehicle and there was probable cause to arrest her. If there are no further questions, we ask you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in State versus Hammond. So you are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Esch. Again, Justice Friedberg is recused from this matter, and Chief Judge Pirtle will remain sitting with the court. Mr. Rappel, good morning to you.